The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Born in the Rockies, Coors Light is lagered cold for a crisp, clean taste. Filtered cold to ensure clarity and brightness. And packaged cold for peak refreshment. Because those who thirst for more deserve the world's most refreshing beer.
Welcome to the Blackhawks Talk Podcast, brought to you by your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealers. Coming up in just a second, Charlie Romeliotis will join me to break down the trade, Henry Jokiharju to Buffalo for forward Alex Nylander. That's coming up. But first, I go one-on-one with the Hawks' new netminder, Robin Leonard. Robin, we talked to you just over a week ago, shortly after you agreed to that one-year deal with the Blackhawks. So I guess the question is, with a wife and a couple young kids, what's the last week been like for you as you get ready to move to Chicago?
Yeah, no, it's been fine. I just kind of came in here to start scouting the city a little bit, meet all the staff, and just get started working out. And, slowly but surely looking at some places maybe to move into.
Excellent. Now, obviously, you're from Sweden. Has anybody told you about Andersonville? And there's a few authentic Swedish restaurants there. Have you been told about that at all?
No, I haven't. I got to look them up.
Yeah, so back in the day when Hjalmarsson and like five or six Swedes were here, they would gather during the holidays at one of the restaurants to have a true Swedish holiday feast. So we'll hook you up with those restaurants down the road.
Yeah, that'd be nice. I appreciate that.
I invite everyone that's listening to this to read the piece, if they haven't already, that you wrote in The Athletic last September. It's very revealing. You go into great detail about, you know, being diagnosed bipolar, having alcoholism, and the treatment you went through. The piece, it really speaks for itself, and I think everyone knows of someone who's dealing with chemical dependency or, you know, a mental health issue. So we're not going to rehash that here, but I wanted to ask you, going through what you have in the last couple of weeks, did that help you cope better with the anxious times of free agency and that ultimatum and the stuff that came up right before you signed with the Blackhawks?
No, 100%. I mean, ever since I kind of took the step and start turning everything around, you know, I learned a lot. And I mean, one of the things is you just got to prepare for a certain way and put all the securities in place that you need to do. And I call them walls. I just put as many walls around me as possible, so I just got to stay in the same line. And I feel very secure in that in the system that I have right now. I mean, I spent most of the week there before the free agency off to Vegas and all that stuff. I've been doing by myself over here. My family's been home, and I'm in a good place. I'm not worried about my sobriety anymore. I have too many walls set up around me, and being medicated for the issues that I had or that I have, I don't have that feel that I need to drink or take pills or do whatever I did before. It was self-medication before, not been able to, I didn't feel good, and I felt good when I was drinking. So, and obviously I have medication and I have other ways of doing that now. So, that's just part of the journey. And it was a tough time here over the last few weeks, but it ended great. Been able to sign here, and it doesn't matter. We're all going to go through some tough parts, and it's just how you deal with them.
You know, Robin, in that athletic piece that you wrote, you discussed those that have helped you and continue to be a part of your recovery support group or the walls that you put up. Did you discuss with the Blackhawks their medical staff and the support systems that they have in place to help you going forward?
No, not really. I thought it was incredibly refreshing, to be honest. They said we have everything in place that you would want. You just got to talk to us about it. But, they were one of the only teams that weren't, holding on to what I've been transparent about. They were interested in me as a hockey goalie, and they heard about me as a person. And that was incredibly refreshing and just made my decision a lot easier to do this. Because that's what I'm fighting for, to kind of change the perception of things. Because you can put us... people with addiction or mental issues are put in the same pocket, and everyone is looked at and put over the same line. It's just around a lot of other problems in life. Once you're something, you're always something in people's eyes. But if you take a deeper look at what I'm doing and people that's been around me for the last 15 months, the risk associated with me is incredibly small of everything that I put around me. But it's just a general perception of addict, mental issues, that's just how it is, and I'm fine with that. But that's what I'm fighting to change, because everyone's different, everyone does things differently. And I my rehabilitation, I've gone in 100%. I do things a certain way with a lot of structure and support systems and everything like that. So I'm not, you talk to the program, the Dr. Lewis and Dr. Shaw and those guys, they'll tell you guys, tell anyone, they have full trust in me. I went from pretty high stages in the program to I'm in level zero now in the program, and there's not many people that's done that within a year. And it's just the fact that, I'm medicated now, and I'm doing a lot of natural stuff, and do a lot of AA meetings and a lot of good things for me that I don't need to drink anymore. I don't feel that craving anymore because I have a little bit more peace in my mind.
Well, I think it's incredibly brave of you to go out there and try to change this stigma attached to some mental health issues. I think back in the 80s and 90s, alcoholism went through a similar thing. It was looked at, oh, this is a drunk. It was a dirty little secret. And then, in the 90s and in the 2000s, it changed. Like, this is a disease. It needs to be treated like any other disease. And I think mental health issues are beginning to go through that process as well. So,
yeah, it's going to take time. And I mean, I'm fighting for the stigma too, but stigma is such a, it's a complex word, because in the end of the day, it's also a reality. What I'm trying to differentiate is if you, like a lot of addicts, they're in denial. I was in denial for a long time, but when you take your step and you do things by the book, if you want to say, and you really put up all the walls around you, and you're I think the biggest piece is being transparent and honest about your issues, because those are the walls. Like, I did that whole article, to be able to help others, but that was also to help myself, because I could have kept everything secret. I could have been quiet about it. I didn't necessarily have to tell any teams what I've been through and whatnot. But then I could also, it would have been a lot of walls that I wouldn't have set up. Then my teammates wouldn't know what I've been dealing with, and my team wouldn't, so I've been able to hide it again. I could have, been drinking or do whatever around people that care about me. I care about them and all that stuff, because there's really, there's no transparency about it. So it was huge risk on my part to do it, but it was necessary for my rehabilitation to do it as well, because I don't think you need to be, to get through this, you need not necessarily help from others, but you need other people to know. It's what I believe in, I don't need anyone to hold my hand and do things for me. But, you know, people know, if people know what I kind of deal with, you know, you always have that extra, you know, oh, I can't drink now, or I can't do this now, you know, or, you know, in the hotel room, I can't drink, you know, the team is aware, you know, they will see my bill to the room or whatnot. you just increase all these walls, you know, yeah, that I'm talking about. And again, it's a reality that we, it's pretty serious stuff. But again, mental illness or being an addict, there are obviously big issues, but there's a lot of other issues out there in the world that other people have too. So, I mean, we're all dealing with something in the end of the day. And I just believe in being transparent about it, even though it can affect you very negatively.
Switching gears a bit, have you had a chance to talk to Corey Crawford over the last week?
No, I haven't yet. I've started meeting some people here, some of the teammates here at the rink. Everyone's been super nice so far. I look forward to talk to Corey, but I've talked to most everyone in the organization. Super organization. I'm very impressed with the whole practice facility they have here, and all the people that are working here are extremely nice. Yeah, it's a top-notch organization for sure.
So what is your summer training regimen like? What have you done in years past, and what's your game plan going forward here?
No, I think I'm starting to get a pretty good handle on with the strength coach here, what we're going to do. Just going to focus on a few different things, and I'm going to be here for pretty much the rest of the summer until the season starts anyway, so we got some time to kind of get in really good shape and just be in as good position as possible for the season to start.
We've seen just how important it is to have two reliable goaltenders in this current NHL. You know you're going to be asked about it at the convention in a couple of weeks and training camp. Who's number one? Who's this? Who's that? Huh. So I'm just going to ask you, how are you approaching your role with the Hawks this season?
People, again, I'm pretty laid back that way right now. You know, I don't, you know, it's a natural thing. It's, people want to create controversies everywhere whether or not. I didn't come here and sign anywhere to come in and take anyone's spot. That's not what I did. I think it's a great opportunity for me and my family to come to a world-class organization and be a part of a winning team. And, you know, one of the things that I know, this team wants to win. And that just gives me a good feeling that if I perform, I'll play. You know, and if I don't perform, I won't play. It's just the way it should be. And that's good enough for me. And, you know, you got to be honest with ourselves too. Corey has been one of the better goalies in the league for a long time. And I look forward to work with him and kind of see what he does and just be a part of the team with him. And, you know, everyone having fun when we win. When you win as a team, it's fun. It doesn't really matter, but obviously one wants to play. Obviously everyone wants to play, but that's going to be up to yourself, no one else. No one needs to promise me anything, and no one has promised me anything, and that's not how it should be.
So no promises have been made, but have you discussed a workload with Jeremy, or is that not on the table?
No, I mean, they said we need two good goalies, and we, you know, there's a lot of back-to-backs and all that stuff, you know, but you know, I think me and Jeremy and even Stan, everyone were on the same page. There's no promises that needs to be made. Let the work talk for itself. And if I play good, I'll play. And I think, you know, we, as you said earlier, the game is, I don't think the game is changing necessarily as much as people are saying it is. But you don't see very many goalies play the 65 to 70 games anymore. The people that are not usually doing that because people want to do it. It's because the other goalie is not performing. It's usually what it comes to. It's like last year, me and Greiser are not going to split if we're both not performing. It's just, it wasn't anything predetermined that, oh, Robin and Thomas, you guys going to split this season. It wasn't how it was. It was we're both performing, so we had the luxury of, the team had a luxury of playing two goalies, and it wasn't like we were playing strictly every other game either. I went on stretches, and Thomas went on stretches. It just went back and forth, and both were performing. And gives the coach the option to do what he thinks is right. So if I perform, I'm probably going to play. If I don't perform, I'll play less. And I think it's the vice versa, you know.
Robin, now to the really important question. Who handles your mask design and the paint job? And can you give us a preview of what your new Blackhawks mask may look like?
Oh, I have no idea yet. I haven't even started thinking about it.
No?
I'm very laid back when it goes to my pads and stuff. We'll come up with something cool. Brian's the pads I use, they usually come up with some cool designs. They always are sending me some stuff that I'm going to look through, and we'll see. I mean, I've been pretty consistent in mask designs over the years, but we'll see if I'll put some more color in there this year. I haven't really decided yet.
Well, I'm glad we rolled out the good weather for you. We're easing you into this Chicago weather scene with perfect weather, and hopefully it's that way when your wife and kids arrive here in the near future.
Yeah, no, it's been great so far. What an amazing city, I gotta tell you. I've been walking around here for the last few days, so getting lost a little bit, but it's pretty nice.
Well, we're glad to have you here. Thank you for your time, and we'll see you in a few weeks at the Blackhawks convention.
Okay, thank you very much.
Get all of your Blackhawks news in the palm of your hand with the My Teams app by NBC Sports. The best place to stream the games, watch highlights, read articles, and more. Download the My Teams app today.
Back on the Blackhawks Talk podcast, joined now by Charlie Romeliotis. So we got to talk at length with Robin Leonard after, last week we had the conference call with all the media. And today we get to talk to him as he's getting acclimated to Chicago. What did you take away from the conversation with Robin?
One of my biggest takeaways, and I don't know why this stuck out to me, is when you asked him about whether he had discussed with the Blackhawks staff, the doctors, and see if they had a good support system. And he said no. Like, he has a really good support system, and the Blackhawks were one of the teams that actually didn't ask about what, you know, it was one of those things like, we need, it's here if you need it, but you know, it seems like he has a good support system. And I don't know if that came into play via free agency when he was talking to other teams that were looking at him long-term deals and were asking about his mental health issues. And I think it said a lot about the Blackhawks that never came into play. They want him to come here, and they were never concerned about it. It's there if you need it. And his on-ice play really spoke for itself. And it seemed like he used the word refreshing. It seemed like it was refreshing for him to come to an organization where they wanted him to be a Blackhawk because they enjoyed what he did for the Islanders last year and his role on the ice.
Yeah, and look, it sounds like I'm, trying to promote the Athletic here. We're big fans of Scott Powers, Mark Lazarus, John Greenberg, and those guys, and what they do, the commitment that they have to the NHL. I can't stress enough for people to read the piece that Robin wrote basically not even a year ago. And it talks about how some of the NHL teams reacted and how, you know, he is trying to change his stigma. And I use the parallel to what alcoholism went through in the 80s and 90s to now what those that are diagnosed with being bipolar, what they're dealing with now. And I think there are some parallels to it. And it is a process. And, you know, he came out to try to help somebody who was reading that or going through something similar. And he also, in our conversation, said he did that almost therapeutically for himself. But it does sound like he's got a support system that he feels is sound. And, he didn't need to bring in, new members to that support system here in Chicago, that he was going to be able to continue what he's already set up in New York and where he went and had treatment in Arizona.
Right, and one of the things he also said is that me writing that Athletic piece was also for myself, because it's important to get it out there, not for other people to know that, you know, what kind of struggles that he's dealing with, because he wants to be open in eliminating the stigma that is attached to mental health. And we saw it with, when he won the Masterton Trophy, he mentioned it in his speech, and he mentioned it. He's been on numerous radio stations since signing with the Blackhawks. I know he was on a radio station in Canada, and he was on NHL Network, and he's not afraid to talk about these issues because he wants to eliminate. He even said it, everyone is going through something, and I really believe that. And eliminating the stigma that comes with mental health is also part of his message. And I really appreciate how laid back he is in trying to get his message out there.
As for, you know, his job now, I asked him about, is he here to be the starter, or what's his approach to his role with this team? He said he's not here to take anyone's spot. He has not talked to Corey as of yet. It sounds like he respects Crawford's resume, and he wasn't promised anything. When we talked to Stan last week, there were a couple conversations throughout that day when it came together on Sunday and Monday that he had not only with Jeremy, but he had with Stan. And, you know, I think it would be natural for the netminder that finishes third in the Vezina Trophy to kind of know, hey, I'm taking a one-year deal. What am I getting myself into? And at least publicly, you know, no amounts or of games have been divvied up and have been promised.
Yeah, and he used the Islanders example last year of him and Thomas Greiss, and how it's not like they went into the season like Robin is the one and Thomas Greiss is the 1B. It's if you performed, you're going to play more, and if you didn't, you're probably going to play less. And it just so happened that Lehner and Greiss were both putting up elite numbers at the goaltending position. And I liked what he said about, if we win, everyone's happy. And I think that's his goal. And he even said it in his conference call when he signed with the Blackhawks, that he came to Chicago because he likes to win. And even Stan Bowman alluded to it in talking to Jimmy Waite, who talked to Corey Crawford about the signing. It sounds like Corey was really excited about the signing because Corey likes to win. Like, they're all competitors and they want to get back to the playoffs because they haven't been there in a couple straight seasons now. So I think the dynamic could work. It's just obviously going to be a talking point from now into training camp, just to see how, and even throughout the season, just to see how this plays out.
And look, we don't know what injuries are going to crop up or what have you, but I mean, I would expect some split 48-34, 50-32. Somebody's going to get more, you know, it's not going to be 41 right down the middle.
Right.
And there'll be times where the hot hand will be played, but we discussed how many back-to-backs are there already?
I think they have 16?
Something like that.
Yeah. So, 16 or 19, I can't remember.
Right there, you know, those that's 16, and then it's not hard to find the remaining as you break it up. But do you look at it with both, you know, in one-year situations, do you look at whichever goalie performs better next season, that's the guy who's likely going to get the extension?
I don't know if it's whoever performs better. I do think the Hawks are still invested in Corey Crawford. I just think they can't go into this season, you know, it's been two straight years now where Corey Crawford has suffered a concussion and has missed some time. I think they need an insurance plan for the long term to see at the end of the season if Corey Crawford can get through this next season healthy and they still feel like he's at or near the top of his game. And depending on how the Blackhawks are as a team and whether he can fit under the cap, then I think Corey Crawford seems like a guy that would certainly re-sign with the Blackhawks and there would be mutual interest. But I do think it's going to be interesting at the end of the year if both goaltenders are performing and the Blackhawks are kind of evaluating their goaltending position. It's going to be interesting to see how it plays out because Robin Lehner is really just entering the prime of his career as a goaltender because he's, I think, what, 28, 29 years old. That's really the prime years of a goaltender. So it's certainly going to be something to monitor at the end of the year.
So as we look at this going forward, you know, Corey's going to be 35 in December. If he stays healthy, you see him continue. I mean, he's talked to us in the past about he thought about retirement because of the concussions and things that he was going through. But if he stays healthy, relatively healthy, and has no more concussion issues, you see him playing beyond next year. You don't see a scenario where at 35 he decides to tap out.
Yeah, it sounds like a player that really just has the competitive juices flowing, and he loves to play hockey, and he wants to play hockey for as long as he can. So I definitely don't think we're going to be in a situation a year from now where Corey Crawford is contemplating retirement, unless he's forced into it where there aren't any contract offers or the market is, you know, but I don't envision that happening. It just, to me, Corey would have been thinking about retirement after this second concussion, but the fact that he came back from it and he still wants to play hockey and he hasn't hinted at any possibility of hanging up the skates tells me that he certainly doesn't plan on hanging up the skates anytime soon.
So big news on Tuesday, the Hawks make a trade. They send former first round pick from 2017 defenseman Henry Jokiharju to the Sabres for 8th overall pick from the 2016 draft, forward Alex Nylander. The son of former Blackhawk Michael Nylander played for the Hawks from 99 to 2002. And Charlie Romaliotis joins me now to continue the discussion here as we break it down. Full disclosure, we were recording a podcast. We did the Robin Leonard interview. We transitioned into how the D pairings may look next season. And we had Jokiharju on the outside looking in, starting the season in Rockford. And so I ask you, are you surprised, Charlie, that the Hawks gave up on Jokiharju?
And in our original discussion, we mentioned the possibility of the defenseman pipeline getting filled and somebody potentially, you know, I mentioned that Jokiharju appears that he's not an untouchable, and it obviously came true a couple hours later. I'm not surprised that he did get traded because it really appeared like he fell out of favor when Jeremy Colliton took over, and it seemed like the Blackhawks were always going to make a trade regarding their defenseman because the pipeline just got so filled. I'm a little surprised, though, that they didn't get an immediate impact-type player in return, because that's the kind of move you make where you try to package a Jokiharju and somebody else to try to get a top nine, a top six forward, and it's immediate help right now. And that's what the accumulation of all these prospects, these high-end prospects, I thought were going to turn into. But they turned it into Alex Nylander, who no doubt has a high ceiling. He was drafted 8th overall, just like Adam Boqvist, but there are concerns about his motor, and there are concerns whether he'll ever reach his potential in his offensive ceiling. So I think that's the part that surprised me a little bit.
So I talked to a scout, or at least contacted one, to kind of get their breakdown on Nylander and the skill set that he brings to Chicago. And here's what that scout had to say. Never really earned a spot. It can be quite lazy and a passenger. Very good skater with acceleration. Good with the puck on his stick. Sees the ice well, can make plays offensively, but sometimes cheats and not his best on the defensive side. So, and that would explain why, you know, he didn't play very much at all with Buffalo, just 7 games in his first 2 years after he was drafted, played only a dozen games last year, 2 goals and 2 helpers. So, you know, in the discussion with Stan Bowman, you know, he talked about the high-end skill. Again, he talked about size, something we saw certainly during the draft. Guys over 6 foot, guys hovering around 200 pounds. That's exactly where Nylander sits. And we also heard from Stan, you know, it sounds like the game plan going in is Kane and Taves together with an opening on the left wing and DeBrincat and Strome together with an opening on the right wing. At least that's what Stan alluded to. And he puts Nylander in the mix with a lot of other guys that will be vying for those 2 top 6 forward slots.
Yeah, and he mentioned the versatility that Nylander brings in a right-handed shot, a guy that can play left or right wing. And he singled out Alex DeBrincat as a player that's really their only right-handed shot up front. So he does bring that versatility. I just think he's still an unknown whether he is an NHL player starting from next season or if he's still a guy that you consider a prospect and competing for a full-time roster spot. So in that sense, like if you pair him with a Kane and a Taze or a DeBrincat or a Strome, like he's obviously going to flourish offensively.
But there's still that unknown because he's still young and he should be breaking into the league at this point. I mean, he was drafted 8th overall in 2016. Like, this should be the year where he really takes the step. Should have been last year, where he really starts to solidify himself in the NHL, and he hasn't done that yet.
Yeah, and you wonder, too, with a team in Buffalo that is not very good, why he couldn't garner ice time on that team. So, you know, there was even questions by other members of the media in that conference call with Stan about, you know, his questioning his motor and drive and things like that, and somewhat echoing the comments of the one scout that I mentioned. The other part of this equation is the Hawks trading away now another first-round pick. And we saw this tweet. You pointed it out a little while ago. The Stan has now traded all of his first-round picks from 2011 to 2017. Mark McNeil, Philip Deneau, Teuvo Teravainen, Hartman, Schmaltz, and now Joki Haru.
Yeah, I don't know if, you know, I don't know what to make of that because on one hand, obviously it doesn't look great because you've turned all the prospects that you thought were high-end first-rounders, but at the same time, you look at the moves that Stan has made trading Nick Schmaltz for a guy like Dylan Strome and trading these guys and turning them some of them into assets. The thing that's interesting to me is that this feels different than the Dylan Strome trade where it's a change of scenery for both. Like Dylan Strome was coming in here, high motor, loves hockey, like wants to be one of the best.
Previous chemistry with DeBrincat.
Yes, and Alex Nylander, one of the things that we just talked about it with Kirby Dach and them bringing in all these players, like they're competitive and they love to play the game. They love to watch the game. They love to get better. Alex Nylander doesn't appear to fit that mold of the Blackhawks. So this is a guy that I guess they're trying to, it's low risk, I guess high reward in a sense that like he's a high risk because you wasted a first round pick, I guess, and traded Joki Haru, but he doesn't have to be the guy that drives your line. They're hoping that he could be a complimentary winger and maybe emerge into like a 60 point plus point player down the road.
So, you know, think back to last season. Joki Haru started playing top 4 minutes for this team. He then went to the World Juniors during the season. Thought he was going to gain some confidence there, and he went to Rockford. And so he went from, you know, playing some significant minutes for this team, most of that under Joel, to not having a role with this team. And in the conference call, Stan said it was the progression of other D-men, the depth of defensemen in this organization, pointing to Boqvist and Beaudin and Mitchell, that allowed them to make this move. And when I talked to some other scouts who said, you know, they still had Joki Haru rated higher, a higher ceiling than Boqvist or Beaudin, even though those two players are younger. So internally, this says to me, they have high ceilings, Boqvist, Beaudin. That's not what they had with Joki Haru. And therefore, he became expendable.
I think of that group, Joki Haru is the player that it's probably the most dependable, but doesn't have the highest ceiling. Like to me, Adam Boqvist is the guy that has the highest ceiling out of those guys, because he will drive possession from the back end. And Ian Mitchell is probably the same way, where you consider him a puck mover, but also reliable. And Nicholas Beaudin is known for his two-way sense as well. I'm not sure where the organization felt with Joki Haru and his development, whether he wasn't progressing the right way or whether they just felt he became the one expendable because they like the other three better. So I don't know. That remains to be seen. I still don't think they're done like moving their defensemen. I mean, the math still doesn't work. Like you have three of these defenseman prospects in the pipeline that are high end first round picks. I would consider Ian Mitchell first round pick at this point.
Yeah, but only Joki Haru was the one that you figured had to see NHL ice this year. You could make a case that Boqvist or Beaudin, you know, are another year away from that. But I get what you're coming from. So with Joki Haru moving on to Buffalo, let's get to, you know, how we think the D pairings will look, at least to start this season or in training camp. And I'll kick things off. I think it'll be Duncan Keith and Eric Gustafson together. It seemed to work for a good bulk of last season. Offensive-minded, Duncan, a little more defensive responsibility with Gus being out there, a puck possession pair. The two that I think will be your shutdown pair is going to be Calvin DeHaan and Connor Murphy. I think that DeHaan and Murphy complement each other well. I think Murphy has been probably the most reliable defenseman overall the last couple of years, and even dealing, you know, with the injury. And I see Seabrook and Mata being your third pair, with Cuckoo and Dahlstrom, your 7 and 8 rotating in from the press box.
I agree with your top pairing. I do think Duncan Keith and Eric Gustafson, that's the pairing that's going to drive your offense, and they're going to play the most minutes. And they worked pretty well together last year. I just think the numbers didn't reflect that entirely because they played so much together, and the other two pairings weren't very reliable. My second pairing, I'm going to say Calvin DeHaan and Brent Seabrook, because I think there's offensive upside there. There's also defensive-mindedness in that group. And then the shutdown pairing is Olli Maatta and Connor Murphy for me, because Murphy played in that role last year. Maatta is likely going to be in that role this year because he's not known to be a puck mover, and he's not the fastest skater, just like Seabrook. That's why I'm not sure the best move is to put them together. We agree on the six, and Cuckoo and Dahlstrom as of right now appear to be 7 and 8, unless there are more moves to come. But we agree on the first pairing, and we agree on obviously the six guys, because five of the guys are under contract for the next 3 years. And Gustafson is obviously the wild card because he's a UFA after next season.
Some other news this week: the Hawks signed their number 3 overall pick, Kirby Dach, to that 3-year entry level deal. Was it $925,000 AAV?
Yep, that's the max.
And this is what they did with Adam Boqvist last year. They'll have more say in his development. It certainly does not mean that he's a lock to make this team out of camp.
No, it doesn't. It's more to, like they did with Boqvist, to have a more hands-on role in his development if he goes back to the WHL. But like he said at the draft, and like he said when he was welcomed in Chicago, Doc wants to make this decision difficult on the Blackhawks coming out of training camp and potentially making the roster. And it was Stan Bowman also said on his conference call about how Jeremy Colleton likes to have multiple players that can play center. So whether that, if Kirby Dach makes the team, whether he starts out on the wing or he starts out as a center, I still think if he does make the team, you have to put him at center because you don't want him changing positions like that of that elite of a player. But it's going to be interesting because we keep looking at how the math is going to work up front, and that there still appears to be some moves left to be made. But I don't know if that's going to impact whether Kirby Dach makes the team or not. I really just think it's going to be whether Kirby is the best option to be one of the 12 guys and playing big minutes doing so.
We'll get to see Dach and rest of the Blackhawks prospects, the development camp. Rosters were released. It'll take place July 15th through the 19th at Fifth Third Bank Arena. Any surprises you saw when those rosters were released?
No, the only one that stuck out to me was Dominik Kubalík, who we've been talking about. He's going to be there, but he's going to be participating in off-ice workouts. I'm not sure if he's nursing an injury or whatever, but that's a guy that would have been intriguing to watch because I know the Blackhawks have sort of big plans for him coming this season, and they've kind of been factoring him into the opening day roster plans.
So we'll be out there all week long. Again, July 15th through the 19th, the development camp taking place here in Chicago. There was a piece, Adam Gretz of Pro Hockey Talk, our friends at NBC Sports, wrote a piece this week saying that the Hawks are the biggest boom or bust team heading into the upcoming season. I agree with that.
Yeah, I think it's certainly fair to say. You can go through every team in the Central Division or in the Western Conference in general and say they got better or they got worse. And Chicago, it really is the wild card. Like, they have the potential to step into the playoff berth, but they also have the potential to be like, okay, we don't know for sure how Andrew Shaw, how Calvin DeHaan, how Olli Maatta, how all of this is going to shake out. So it really is the wild card in the Central Division, because that's the division where some crazy things can happen. And I agree with Adam and how they might be the wild card in the Western Conference.
Look, I think all the moves were made with specific intent. And there's been summers recently where we haven't walked away. We've been scratching our head like, oh, how's this going to work? They were eighth in goals scored. So, you know, goal scoring seemingly on paper didn't look to be a problem. Penalty kill certainly was an issue. Bring in Carpenter. You address things on the blue line with Mata and Dahan. The power play was productive last year once, you know, they got going in late December and they figured some things out. Now, again, you hope they can return to form in those areas. They upgraded in net. I mean, you bring in Robin Leonard to, you know, be your either your backup or your starter or however it ends up working out to be games-wise. Corey and Leonard is a better 1-2 punch than Delia and Crawford. It just, that's a fact.
Yeah, and even Delia and Cam Ward as well when Crawford was hurt. And another thing, another big piece of this puzzle is that the Blackhawks are not going to be going through a midseason coaching change where it took them a while to really get off the floor and running and accustomed to Jeremy's style of play. Like, they're going to have a whole training camp. They're going to have preseason games, and they're going to try to hit the ground running on opening night so that they're not playing catch-up in the second half all year long.
Any other notes, nuggets, things you want to pass along to the Blackhawks fans?
I don't, but I do want to warn the city of Chicago because Thursday is our NBC company outing.
Mm.
And the last two company outings last year,
major deals have happened.
Last year, it was the Marian Hossa deal went down, and we did an emergency podcast the next day because nobody was here to record our podcast. And then the previous NBC Sports Chicago outing, the Jose Quintana and Eloy Jimenez deal went down. So if you are looking for something potentially big to happen in the Chicago sports world, Thursday might be the day. And God help us if it's another Blackhawks trade or whatever, because I am not getting off that boat this time.
Romelu Otis off that boat.
I probably actually will, but it's the principle.
All right. Great stuff, Charlie. Again, you can follow Charlie at Charlie.
At C. Romelu Otis.
C. Romelu Otis.
Half the audience will not be able to spell that, but that's okay.
Spell Romelu Otis.
R-O-U-M-E-L-I-O-T-I-S.
And I'm at Boyle NBCS. We thank the Blackhawks for setting up our conversation with Robin Leonard. Thanks to Robin for being very candid and open with his time as he's here in Chicago trying to transition into his new hockey home. And we thank you for listening, as always. That's going to do it for the Blackhawks Talk podcast, brought to you by your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealers. For Charlie, I'm Pat. Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you next time.